Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start today on Beacon Hill, where there is a gap. Legislators were sworn in for the new session last week, and this term, the Black, Latino, and Asian legislative caucuses have 32 members, according to the Black and Latino Legislative Caucus. That is out of 200 legislators, 160 in the House, 40 in the Senate. So there's a tension. That is progress over, say, a decade ago. And in the state's constitutional offices, women and Black women made history this time. But it doesn't change the fact that there is a gap between real progress and real representation. So what does that mean for what happens next, for the policies our legislature does and does not support, for the interests of those still underrepresented? That's what we want to dive into now. We have three guests joining us. State Senator Liz Miranda, who is newly sworn in as a state senator after serving in the House. Senator, welcome back to the show.
Good morning.
And here in Studio 2, State Representative Russell Holmes of the Massachusetts 6th Suffolk and former chair of the Massachusetts Black and Latino Legislative Caucus, and Samuel Gebru is a senior fellow at the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University and the convener of the Massachusetts Black Lawmakers Roundtable at Tufts. Representative Holmes, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And Samuel Gebru, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
So, Senator Miranda, I'm going to start with you. Our understanding from the Black and Latino Legislative Caucus is last term there were 17 members, now there are 25. Does that feel like progress to you?
We've got to take our wins when we get them and continue to do the things that we know will work to increase the diversity on Beacon Hill. So one of the things I want to applaud is both the Speaker and the Senate President around recruitment efforts, the ability to look at what redistricting did. We nearly have doubled or have gained at least 8 to 10 members in the Black and Latino Caucus. The AAPI Caucus has grown as well. The creation of the Joint Committee on Racial Equity, Civil Rights, and Inclusion, the creation of that committee. But as the fourth Black woman in history and the first Cape Verdean woman, I'm happy that we're now 10% of the Senate with two Latino men and two Black women, but that's not nearly enough for the representation I think we really need on Beacon Hill to not only be representative in sort of race and gender and geography, but also to work on the issues that Black and brown people need across the Commonwealth. There's still no Indigenous representation, although Indigenous people have been here for thousands of years.
So, Representative Holmes, I'll turn to you. You were first elected in 2010. We're talking about this gap, right? Real progress, and yet still a real gap.
Yep.
Does it feel different now than it did 13 years ago?
Of course it feels different. I don't begin my applause, though, with the Senate President and the Speaker. I begin my applause with all of the efforts of the folks like Gloria Fox, Byron Rushing, Ben Swan. I can tell you when I arrived in 2010, there was 10 seats that were by geography laid out to be majority Black and brown. We've gone from 10 to 20 in our last redistricting cycle and now 20 to 33. And so, yes, but the reality of that conversation really begins from an unfortunate incident with Speaker Finneran. As you know, Speaker Finneran had some issues with redistricting. And as a consequence, former Speaker DeLeo and Mike Moran were very intentional 10 years ago to say, hey, we're not going to have those same problems again with redistricting. We're going to make sure that we actually beat the advocates. The advocates had come up with, I think, 19 seats that were majority of color. The goal was let's beat them and let's get to 20. And so we did that, 10 just in Boston alone. And taking that same spirit after what happened with George Floyd, I think they understood that, again, we need to be intentional about making sure we create all of these districts in the House and Senate. And so it was an unfortunate incident that happened with Speaker Finneran that I think has forced the hand of both the speakers and the Senate President to do what is right, which is something they should have done for many, many generations.
Referring there to former Massachusetts House Speaker Tom Finneran. So I'll turn to you here, Samuel Gebru. And I'm going to note, we reached out to House Speaker Ron Mariano, to Senate President Karen Spilka for this conversation. They created the Joint Commission on Racial Equity, Civil Rights, and Inclusion in the last session. Speaker Mariano's office did not give us a statement. Senator Spilka's office said, quote, "The Senate president has always believed that each senator brings a unique perspective, lived experience, and individual values to their role. And so a diversity of voices is beneficial to the Senate as a whole," end quote. That's a portion of the statement. What I'm hearing in this conversation, which I think is worth note, and I'd like your reaction to it, is, yes, there has been progress, but progress through redistricting. Not progress through change in attitudes necessarily of voters that see representation differently in a given district than they would have before. Is that a fair statement?
I would agree. When you look at 2020 numbers, about 84% of Massachusetts voters in 2020 were white, yet they were 71% of the overall population, right? So we still do suffer from a lack of voter turnout and voter engagement. Massachusetts has not fully made it easy to vote in this state, and so we still have a lot of work to do around voter access and voter participation. So there's a lot more that needs to be done there. Redistricting has definitely been enormously important. But in addition to redistricting, it's one thing to create opportunity districts. It's another thing to support candidates that are running, training them, financing them, looking at things like public funding of elections, et cetera. You know, there are a whole host of other issues. It's not just enough to say we've redistricted and now we can walk away, right? Yeah. That's one key part of the equation. And then the other thing, even, you know, just going back, Representative Holmes and Senator Miranda mentioned the Joint Committee on Racial Equity, Civil Rights and Inclusion, which is fantastic. But as we know, it's not just enough to establish a standing committee. You have to support it, support its work, fund its work, ensure that it has the adequate staffing and political capital that it needs to actually carry out its mandate.
We're talking about real representation in the Massachusetts legislature. Representative Russell Holmes, you wanted to add something to what Samuel Gebru just said.
Well, there are so many things I would like to add in such a short amount of time. Please know that I got demoted. When you say about the attitude of what happens in that building, I got demoted after making a conversation about leadership when I was chair of the Black and Latino Caucus.
In 2017.
Yeah, taken from my vice chairmanship because I was saying, look, still, we might be in this building, but we need to be in the power room, in the rooms that the decisions are being made. And I'm still not seeing us in those rooms. And so my problem is still, one, the leadership doesn't have to put any time, talent, and resources into our communities because we're going to send you a D. So you don't have to worry about whether or not a Democrat is going to show up. So you don't have, in a district like mine or in what Senator Miranda just ran in the Senate, you're not going to see them put a whole bunch of effort because no matter what, they're going to get a D. Two, once we get in the building, my problem has always been, here it is in our communities, Black and brown, we're going to show up somewhere in the neighborhood of 90, 95% for the Democratic Party. And then you get to the building and it's run by Democrats. And then who is the least reliable voter demographically for all of Democrats? And that is a white male, the least reliable voter. So here I am, the most reliable voter, bringing the most reliable voter into this building. And then you think you should sideline me because of the fact that my folks demand that we get the amount of attention we need. So has the attitudes changed? Yes. I think that was a forced attitude change, like I said, with what happened with redistricting, but there's still just a lot more to do.
And to kind of follow through, so Thomas Finneran, who you spoke about as Speaker, his term ended in 2004. In 2017, when you challenged the House Speaker, that was Robert DeLeo. We now have Ron Mariano as
Much
House
better.
Speaker. And Senator Liz Miranda, I'll turn back to you here. I have questions, but I just want to give you a chance to pick up the threads we've been hearing already first.
So I want to co-sign a couple of things I think are incredibly important. This is why elections matter. And thank you to Sam for talking about that. And to Rep. Holmes, thank you so much for talking about being in the power rooms. We understand how important to be able to be in those power rooms. We also need to be able to reach elected people across the Commonwealth and build the type of coalitions with people who actually don't agree with us. Black women and black men have been the bedrock of this democracy in this country. And I just want to give a quick history lesson. In 1788, Massachusetts became a state, but we were in existence since the 1620s. Black people have been in Massachusetts documented since 1637. So if you look at 1788, it took 185 years for Doris Bunty, who was the first black woman to be elected. It took 186 years for the late Bill Owens to be elected to the state Senate as the first black man. When they both were elected, they did two really major things that I think are incredibly important to know, that when you elect black and brown people and you allow them or give them the room to do what they're meant to do, Doris Bunce created the Women's Caucus and the Black and Latino Caucus. You have Bill Owens, who became a national leader on reparations that we're still fighting for today. So it's not just about electing folks. It's not just about redistricting. You're right, Rexy. But I think one of the things that's incredibly important is how do we use our collective power? And I plan on using that power with Senator Edwards, with Senate President Spilka, to really encourage not only electing more black and brown people and women, but also ensuring that we're building the bench. We cannot just go there alone. I just was elected. I was just inaugurated, and I'm bringing an LGBTQIA young man, and I'm bringing two women of color. When we go, we always bring people with us, and I think that's an important piece of the puzzle, because we have to also diversify staff and any diversity in all levels of government.
We're talking about representation in the Massachusetts legislature here on Radio Boston. Senator Miranda, I'm going to take a break from you for a minute. We're having some trouble with your line, so I'm going to turn to our other guests. I'm hoping we're going to be able to bring you back and strengthen that line. So I'll turn now back to the guests here in Studio 2. Samuel Gebru, I think the question I have for you is, in your research and analysis at Tufts, lay out for us what we know about what the policies differences look like enacted when there is more representation of people of color in a legislature and more representation in terms of gender, gender identity, LGBTQIA, et cetera. Do we have data that says, yes, you actually see different policies than when there is underrepresentation in a populace?
Yeah, you know, and I appreciate Senator Miranda for the history lesson. The reality is that, you know, when we think about inequity and inequality in the United States, in Massachusetts, that was codified by law, through law, and it's through generations of policy violence that we have seen these disparities across the Commonwealth. And so it is that same instrument, public policy, that has been used to create inequities that can be used to rebalance and restore communities and to create greater opportunities towards equity. So when you think of, you know, what are some of the data points, what are some of the pieces of legislation, I think of things like the Crown Act. I think of things around birthing.
The Crown Act about natural hair.
About natural hair. I think of things around birthing justice. I think about things like the major piece of criminal justice reform that was passed roughly 2-3 years ago. That was through the leadership of the Black and Latino Caucus. That was elected officials like Representative Holmes and then Representative Liz Miranda and others that came together and said, hey, we're offering up some solutions here that need to be part of the bill that was ultimately enacted. And so when we think about who's at the decision-making table, when you bring that intersectional lens to the conversation, you are undoubtedly going to legislate differently. Your lived experience matters, right? Just how you know, the LGBTQIA community matters. If you're not from that community, you're not going to be able to adequately have that lens. If you're not from you know, the Black community or the Latinx community or the Asian community or the Indigenous community, you're not going to be able to legislate with that lens. Not to say that you can't represent those communities or those people, but you're not going to fully understand what it's like. And so when I think of things around, for instance, voting rights and democracy accessibility, these are issues that are primarily impacting communities of color, immigrant communities, and low-income communities across the Commonwealth. You know, making sure that, you know, we do have same-day voter registration, making sure that we do make Election Day a holiday, making sure that we do mandate time off and that we have things in different languages, et cetera, that we're financing candidates through public funds. That's important from an equity perspective. Not everybody has the money or the connections to be able to run for office. You know, how many of us know people that can write a $1,000 check? So those sorts of issues come up when you bring that lived experience with you. And I think our electeds of color bring particularly that lens, which is why I'm always frustrated when I look at the leadership in the House and in the Senate. And, you know, last time around, only 5% of legislative leadership were people of color. So how do we change that? You know, the decision makers, the gatekeepers, in the hierarchical structure, how do we make that more inclusive and more reflective of the Commonwealth as a whole?
So turning back to State Representative Russell Holmes of the 6th Suffolk District, and I want to note we were not able to bring Senator Liz Miranda back on, having too much trouble with the line. So I want to take this moment now to thank State Senator Liz Miranda for being with us on the show for the time that she could. I do want to note Representative Holmes, then Speaker DeLeo denied that your demotion was in response to your comments. Just kind of rounding out that picture.
He can say whatever he wants.
Rounding out that picture, I want to come back to you now. So there are we've got a couple minutes left, and I want to, there are two categories of needs. There are many categories of needs, but two that I've heard here that I'd like to get your comment on. And the one is the entire structure of campaign financing to allow enfranchisement of more people who want to run. Are there practical changes you think we could make in the short term there that would work?
Well, as I said before, I think the difficulty there is almost all of the Democrats are going to, all the folks who are going to run, people of color are going to be Democrats. And the focus so much in this Commonwealth is going to be about making sure we continue to have these supermajorities. And so there's an understanding for why all of a sudden we don't have to pour a lot of money into these 33 districts. So you
think the top priority is going to be maintain the supermajority for the Democrats?
And I think the top priority that we should focus on is now leadership in the building. So not only having us in the building, now there are 32 of us in the building. It is now time for the Senate president and the speaker to now come up with their leadership teams. Let's see who's in those leadership teams. That's what this caucus should focus on, one. Two, I think the other thing about the building is it's just folks have just gotten accustomed to the building being run with all the power being with just a few amount of people. That's why I'm saying if we're not in those rooms, we're not going to be ever in the rooms that with deciding where the money goes, what's going to be the priority legislation. And those are the two things, because it is about economic justice we should be focused on now. We've done enough social, not that we've done enough, but we've had all this focus on social justice. Let us empower Black and brown people, Asian people, financially moving forward out of COVID. That's what the focus should be.
So structural reform within the Massachusetts
Absolutely.
State House as well. All right, we're going to have to stop there. Representative Russell Holmes was first served in 2010. He is a representative of the 6th Suffolk District and former chair of the Massachusetts Black and Latino Legislative Caucus. And Samuel Gabru is a senior fellow at the Center for State Policy Analysis at Tufts University and convenes the Massachusetts Black Lawmakers Roundtable at Tufts. Thanks to both of you and to State Senator Liz Miranda, who joined us at the top of the hour for this conversation. I recognize there's more to talk about here, and we will do that
for
here
sure.
in 2023. Thank you to both of
Thank
you.
Thank you, Tiziana. Thank you very much.